Thanks. Fast Money starts right now live from the NASDAQ market site overlooking New York's Times Square. I'm Scott Wapner. Our traders on the desk tonight are Tim Seymour, Brian Kelly, Steve Grasso, and Guy Adami. And tonight on Fast, more trouble for Tesla. The Department of Justice now probing CEO Elon Musk's tweets about taking the company private. We'll tell you what it all means for the stock, which was down today. Plus, the reviews are in for the latest crop of iPhones. You won't believe what people are saying either. We'll have the phones here live on the set. And we'll do a fast money test as well. But first, we start with the escalating trade war as the U.S. and China continue to go head to head. The president making comments earlier today, capping a busy day of trade headlines. Let's go out to Eamon Javers in D.C. for those details. Eamon.
Yeah, Scott, that's right. The administration broadly defending the president's approach here in terms of the tariffs on China that he announced last night. Wilbur Ross was on CNBC earlier today, and he said ultimately he believes that the United States has the upper hand in this negotiation. Here's what he said.
China doesn't have enough imports from us to make a reciprocal tax. China, we sell them less than $150 billion a year. So in that sense, they're out of bullets.
At a press conference later in the day in the East Room here at the White House, the president talked about his approach broadly to this trade issue. He said, ultimately, the American public has been paying the price for what he framed as decades of mismanagement by American politicians and American presidents who preceded him. Here's what he said.
We are the piggy bank to the world. We've been ripped off by China. We've been ripped off by, excuse me, Mr. President, the European Union, of which you're a part of. We've been ripped off by everybody. And I want to protect the American worker, the American farmer, the ranchers, the companies. And we're not being ripped off, you will see, in a little while.
No indication from the president or anybody else here at the White House today as to whether or not the U.S. is going to automatically respond to the Chinese retaliation that was announced this morning. In the president's announcement yesterday, he said the United States would automatically follow up on any Chinese retaliation with additional tariffs of the U.S. on the part of the U.S. of up to $267 billion of tariffs on additional goods coming from China. That would be pretty much every export from China to the United States that would be facing tariffs in that situation. It's assumed here in Washington that the president, when he says automatic, he means automatic, and that's coming as well. But we'll wait and see for that, Scott.
Sure will. Eamon, thanks so much. Eamon Javers, North Lawn of the White House this evening. Despite the trade war, the Dow staged quite the rally today, surging at one point more than 250 points, as consumer discretionary and industrials, which are most sensitive to trade fears, leading the way. Guy, I guess it's what trade war? You look at the market today. Market doesn't seem to care.
I think it's what Steve alluded to last night in terms of the 10% versus 25% and what a difference a day makes. I take a little umbrage with what Mr. Ross said. I don't think the Chinese are out of bullets. I think they have a number of bullets, not least of which they could devalue their currency and we back to square zero. I'm not saying they're going to do that, but they definitely still have bullets in the gun. With that said, I mean, what the market continues to tell you is they do think that there's going to be some sort of not reconciliation, but they'll come to some sort of agreement and everything will be fine. I'm not certain that is the case. What I will say, and we talked about this last week, for whatever reason, all of a sudden, steel stocks seem to be getting their footing. We mentioned Cleveland Cliffs last week. With the rest of the steel sector lower, that's been going higher. Up again today, almost 4%, as was U.S. Steel. So there have been things that are starting to show some rays of hope, and it comes in the form, in my opinion, of steel stocks and a lot of these pharmaceutical stocks that continue just to grind higher.
I mean, the market clearly said today, in markets, perception is reality. And the perception is we are closer to the end of this trade war than the beginning of this trade war. And that's what the markets are telling you today. To Steve's point, 10% wasn't as much as 25%. We have the headline up saying the trade war escalates. The market's saying today was a de-escalation. I don't know if it's going to be right in 3 months, but for today, it appears to be the right.
Hey, Goldman thinks that it's going to get worse. Are we too complacent?
I agree with Goldman. No, come on, guys. I mean, I agree with Guy. First of all, I think they do have other bullets. Guy's pointed out pretty much every time we talk that the Chinese are in this for the long haul. I would argue, first of all, the data came out. China's been a net seller of treasuries 4 out of the last 5 months. Again, not in their best interest to dump treasuries, but I think they're in a position to play not only a longer game, but as I will continue to say, this is not your father's trade war.
So why
this is
the
all
market,
about China 2025.
Why hasn't the market reacted to it, though? So you have to trade the market that's in front of you. I would think that the market has made up its mind that the U.S. does have more leverage than the Chinese.
For the moment.
For today, right.
Yeah, but, for the moment. But to BK's point, I think we're closer to the end. So Guy mentioned
So the market is at all-time highs. The market has totally outperformed the rest of the world. You're seeing actually global indicators which indicate the trade war is having a major effect. If it has a major effect on the globe, it does have an effect on us. And it's been so long since we've gotten back to
the market is a forward-looking mechanism, and it doesn't see headwinds for the United States market. It's always about 6 to 8 months ahead.
It's absolutely fair to say that here we are right near the highs, and the market is certainly looking at growth in tech and defensive sectors, and that the rest of the world has been an aberration.
Look,
but I don't think that continues. And by the way,
Tech is underperformed, and the market has done the heavy lifting outside of that. So there's been other triggers that have pushed this market higher, and you don't see people diving into emerging markets even with their underperformance.
I don't think we're going to know for a while. I mean, you get Polaris, Macy's, FedEx. There were a handful of others today that are the CEOs talking about.
But even if they do come out,
it's all about earnings.
This is still about earnings and the fundamental backdrop in the USA market, and it's still positive. And trust me, these politicians are doing their own polling going into midterm elections. This is still resonating with the voter.
But it comes down to whether or not investors think this is a permanent issue or is it temporary. And I'm just saying today, investors are saying they think this is temporary. So even if we get earnings reports that come out and say trade war is hurting us, as long as investors believe that this is a one-quarter phenomenon, and let's call it January, February, things are going to be better, then you're going to be okay. If it doesn't, if it goes on and it escalates and they devalue and they sell treasuries, then we've got
There's no reason to really believe that the Chinese are going to come to the table ahead of the midterm elections,
I don't believe it, and I've said it before. I'm not suggesting I'm right. In my opinion, I don't see any reason for them to. Given what's going on in the country right now, if they've waited this long, why would the Chinese come to the table?
If he does something behind the scenes to just play the olive branch, he talks tough on television, but what happens if there's something behind the scenes where he's offering them a more enticing deal, more incentivize the Chinese to come to that table?
By the way, if we continue to get this kind of a move in markets and actually the dollar that weakens, that puts the Fed more in play than less. And that is something that I don't think we're acknowledging. I think the Fed will go in December, and I think they're probably going to go three more times. We think we know where terminal rates are going to be. But if you look at the dynamics here, I think the market is not pricing in enough risk. And the fact that we've got a VIX now at 12, or at least with a 12 handle, that doesn't, today I don't feel like running into the market saying, oh, wow, fresh highs on the S&P because we didn't respond poorly to trade news.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable when you think about it. You go, you get this announcement, you have tough talk. The president was in the Oval Office sitting next to the Polish president today and said if China continues to retaliate, then they're going to do the $267 billion additional, right? You get this tough rhetoric, this bluster. I don't know whatever you want to call it. And the Dow only goes up.
Right.
The Dow goes.
But even the retaliation, do you remember when we talked about this a couple of months ago, the retaliation from the Chinese government was supposed to be 5, 10, 25 or 30% retaliation. Now they're only saying 5 or 10. So they're all backing off what they initially said.
Yep. All right. Well, as we said at the top, industrial stocks were strong all day. It's the best performing sector this month. Names like Caterpillar, Lockheed Martin, United Technologies and Boeing leading the way. And our next guest says there are three industrial stocks to buy right now. Let's go off the charts with Todd Gordon of TradingAnalysis.com. Hey, Todd.
Hey, Scott. How you doing? First, let's take a look at the XLI. This is the sector SPDR that tracks the industrials. And as you can see from a technical point of view, since 2011, we're in a beautiful parallel channel here. There is just no reason to fight this trend at this point. Moreover, where will we start to run into technical resistance? We have more upside to go. We're kind of range-bound just inside of this little channel here, so we're neither overbought nor oversold. Within the makeup of the XLI, there's three main industry groups we want to take a look at. They're railroads, they're going to be defense, and industrial conglomerates. And the one thing that I would mention here is those conglomerates have been very, very weak. GE and 3M have been underperforming. If you take those out, industrials, I think, would be a lot stronger. As I mentioned, defense, very strong. Boeing is in a beautiful, just kind of sideways pennant here. It's caught between a ceiling and a floor. At some point, the trend that was in place prior should break out. Boeing looks wonderfully. Take a look at Raytheon, broke to new highs today. Boeing, I think, will follow suit. Next one here is Lockheed Martin. Not as strong as Raytheon and Boeing, but you can see we have a nice classic inverse head and shoulders here. So you've got a low, a lower low, a higher low. Shorts are caught. They're panic buying. They're starting to get on their horse. Buyers are coming in. Momentum, guys, no reason we shouldn't go up and retest that 360. You get my point. Finally, let's take a look at a rail. CSX, again, kind of looking like that XLI, a long-term parallel up channel here. Abu, come on, trend lines. CSX is very much starting to move towards the upper end. You might have another $10, $20 in CSX. You take a look at Union Pacific, UNP broke the new highs. This is kind of a catch-up trade, so I think you focus in on the rails and the defense within the industrials.
Yeah. You got a question?
Quick question would be, I think, Todd, a lot of these things you're looking at, this sort of you overlay an S&P chart looks exactly the same.
Yep.
A bit of a sell-off, starting to test all-time highs. You're going to see the commensurate move in the S&P 500?
You know what, guy? You reminded me. I kind of blew the segment here. Below there was a ratio chart of, I'm just going to, full transparency, right? There's a ratio of the industrials to SPX, guy. And what you're seeing is there was underperformance of XLI relative to the S&P, but we started to do kind of a hook bottom here in the last month. As Scott mentioned at the top, XLI starting to outperform on a relative basis. So there's quantitative evidence that industrials are coming on here.
Tim's going to try and save the segment.
I wouldn't say you blew it, buddy. It was a small miscue. That's heavy duty. Industrials, though. Why are people? You're showing me this chart, and yet we feel like the industrials have been under so much pressure from the trade war. Talk about that.
Well, I maybe BK said it. Maybe the markets are discounting that. Perhaps we're going to win the trade war. Maybe they're pushing China to become more of a consumer base rather than be an export technology-based nation. Maybe they're going to be, markets are discounting that they're going to be a consumer demand-based economy and start consuming some of the world's goods and services. I'm not sure. I keep it simple. I'm a simple-minded technician following these trends and these lines. And so far, this market just looks like it wants to point higher.
Yeah. Todd, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
All right. I didn't even know he blew it.
No,
one would have known he blew it.
Biggest mistake was admitting he blew it.
Never let them know that you blew it when you blew it. I mean, as a musician, you never stop. You never tell them that you screwed up.
All right. Industrials this month, CAT 7%, Lockheed 7%, United Tech 6%, Boeing 5%. Does this continue or is this going to run out?
I would think that, to Tim's point where he just said that everyone thinks that they should be under pressure or they are under pressure and everyone talks about it, what happens if everyone got so short all of these industrial names against their long techs positions, and now that unwind is taking place right now? So I think you're seeing guys cover in the industrial space because the trade war fell a little flat.
Well, also look at what Simple Todd put up there. He put up a lot of the defense sectors. And we know today that we have a bill that's going to increase military spending. That'll likely continue into next year. So now you have, in this particular sector, trade war de-escalation, as well as an increase in defense spending. So I actually do think you stick with the defense names, Boeing, Lockheed, Raytheon.
I don't know. You guys are saying that the trade war is de-escalating on a day where we put these tariffs on and we're threatening.
I'm saying the market told us that today.
What did the market tell you?
Yeah, today. Okay, great. The market told us today. That's great.
The market is smarter than all of us individually.
Because it went up the Dow went up 250 one day?
What should it do? Would you feel better if it went down? And then what? Would you be right if it went down?
I wouldn't feel anything.
Here's my view on this.
We still have no deal.
Let's talk about the rails, because they are certainly coincident to where we are seeing both growth in GDP. We've actually had some headwinds to the housing sector, and yet these guys continue to crush it. I think there's a lot of growth that's priced into a big part of the industrial economy, and therefore that concerns me, because to me there's no way we haven't fast-forwarded growth into this economy. I think the trade war, there's no way we were going to have felt this. And as much as the market's a forward-looking indicator, the economics aren't going to be weaker until we get towards the end of the year, and the market will price that in before that. So I don't think you need to chase rails here. I wouldn't be chasing industrials.
The only one I look at in terms of I think you still can't chase is Kansas City Southern and Caterpillar. If you go back to the end of July when they reported additional $10 billion stock buyback on valuation and the way it sort of defended the lows that it recently made, I think the most interesting one out of all the ones that, what'd you call him, Simple Todd? Yeah,
Simple Todd.
Why simple?
Because he said he's a simple guy. And he's a simple technician.
You picked up
simple
on
Simple Todd, yeah.
Simple in that regard, but he's far more complex.
Do you think he blew the segment?
Not at all. I thought he did a wonderful
job. Simplicity is complexity. Let's put it that way.
Good point by BK. I think Caterpillar goes higher.
All right, coming up, shares of Tesla getting slammed today as the DOJ now looking into Elon Musk's tweet. Is a criminal probe coming, and what could that mean for the stock? Plus,
We got our hands on two new iPhones Apple just released last week. We're putting them to the ultimate fast money test tonight. You won't want to miss that. And later, it is the stock captivating Wall Street and Main Street. Potstock Tilray. Jim Cramer just sat down with the CEO. We'll tell you what he said about his stock's parabolic rise. We are live from Times Square in New York City. There is much more fast money next. Just when you thought the worst was behind Tesla, the Justice Department now looking into Elon Musk's tweets about the company. Phil LeBeau breaking it down from Burlingame, California. Phil?
Yeah, Scott, it's unclear how intense this investigation is by the Department of Justice as it looks into the tweet that Elon Musk sent out in early August regarding the possibility of taking Tesla private. There were some reports earlier in the day that this is a criminal probe. We've been unable to confirm that, but here's what we do know. With Tesla confirming that, yes, it has been in touch with the Department of Justice, the focus of what the Department of Justice is asking questions about is the take private tweet that was sent in early August. Tesla says it has sent in documents that were requested by the Department of Justice. In a statement, Tesla says, we received a voluntary request for documents from the DOJ, and we have been cooperating in responding to it. We have not received a subpoena, a request for testimony, or any other formal process. We respect the DOJ's desire to get information about this and believe that the matter should be quickly resolved as they review the information they have received. While it's unclear whether or not this probe is a huge issue for Tesla and for Elon Musk, it did put shares of Tesla under pressure today. Remember, Tesla is also under an SEC investigation as the SEC looks into the tweet that Elon Musk sent out on August 4th where he said he was considering taking the company private. That, of course, sent shares moving higher, and eventually those shares came back when Elon Musk and Tesla's board said they would not consider going private. Scott, back to you.
Okay, Phil, thank you very much. Phil LeBeau joining us there from California. What do you guys do with this, right? Simultaneous probes, DOJ, SEC. Does it make the stock a no-touch until you get a little more clarity?
It's another distraction for Tesla, and it makes it untradeable at this point in time. Unfortunately, because I think in the long run, I love Tesla, but here, I wouldn't touch it. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. They just need to focus on making cars. If they can do that, maybe you get investors back.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the least of the problems. I realize that the headlines, and I realize Elon Musk has been, you know, definitely not giving shareholders a lot of comfort. But the issues really come around the delivery schedule that we're actually getting up to another quarter end. We have earnings around the corner.
I don't think that even matters anymore.
Need delivery. Of course they matter.
I don't think it even matters anymore. When you have this type of investigation, the top 10 holders have a fiduciary responsibility. They can't be involved in the stock. They have to lighten up on a lot of these plays. Plus, if he's removed, I don't know. Maybe if he's removed or barred, maybe it's a positive for the stock. I'm not sure.
I don't think so.
So if it's not, then it's
Tesla
then
is Musk.
You
Musk
can't
is
touch
Tesla.
It. You can't touch it now during the investigation. If you think it's a negative,
let me just throw this at you. I remember a company very well called Herbalife that had a DOJ and SEC investigation going on at the very same time. When that news broke, the stock went down. Things looked pretty dire. I think we all know how that movie ended. Mm. Right? If you're a believer in the long term
of
Scott a company, why don't you use this as a buy?
That's fine, except for has the stock really sold off on those concerns? No, we've got 3 or 4% today. Maybe you could say 5% total. That's not the issue with Tesla. The issue is you have a CEO who's a visionary who seems unhinged. You've got a company that can never hit deliveries, and you've got a massive competitive landscape that slowly the pocket is collapsing around them.
Two nights in a row, the pockets. You know, Tim has mentioned competition for a while, and I have discounted that. But actually, you know, you're starting to see Audi come out with commercials. Jim Cramer, I think, on Monday said competition was a factor. So Tim's been spot on this. Look, again, I'll say it for the 100th time. When they said funding secured at 375, I thought for sure the stock was headed beeline to 420. I was wrong. But the fact that it bounced off 280 and here we are again indicates to me maybe there is further downside.
What if someone buys Tesla? Anybody gaming that out? Anybody gaming that?
Who buys them?
I don't know. There's any number of companies out there that might be interested.
I think
why
it would
not?
Be very. It would be a big gulp. And how are you going to integrate Musk into another company?
Well, the rallies, because that's what it rallied on the fake tweet.
So, yeah, but so it's different between
it would rally.
It's different between him taking a private and another company buying him.
I'm not
That's
talking
a very
about
different
a private,
integration.
I'm talking about somebody
Well, look,
else
look just to go back to the stuff that Steve's talking about, this is the most shorted security by concentration of clients at any prime broker you're going to ask right now. So there's no question that this stock, and yesterday, even for a stock that's most shorted, yesterday was the fourth most shorted. I was just checking some of the stats that I get from brokers. Yesterday, you know, tells you that the pressure is probably increasing on a stock. If you got a whiff that there's a takeout, these guys will run to cover. But the biggest issue here is that this is a company that has to deliver on fundamentals. And the stock trades at something that fundamentally makes no sense.
All right. Yeah.
To your point, the stock is ripe for a battle of the billionaires, which I think you know a little about.
We'll see.
Yeah. Oh, well, no,
kind of have it
I
already.
See what you see what I did? There. The Herbalife, Battle of the Billionaires. Was there a simple book on that or something?
Simple God, didn't you say you're going to wear a cowboy hat tonight?
I think there was a book written about that.
All right, for more on Musk, please head over to CNBC.com. There's a great story on Tesla there as we speak. There it is. Meantime, here's what else is coming up on Fast.
No, it's just shares of hot pot stock Tilray, which is now worth more than 126 companies in the S&P. And after you hear what the CEO just told Cramer, you'll understand why. Did you see that? It's the small difference that might explain why Apple stock is surging. And we'll tell you what that is when Fast Money returns.
Welcome back to Fast Money. First wave of reviews rolling in now on Apple's new iPhone. So how is the tech community responding to the latest upgrade? Our Josh Lipton live in San Francisco right now with those details. Hey, Josh.
Scott, the reviews are in for these new iPhones, so let's run through some of the highlights. The Verge's Nili Patel saying Apple's iPhone XS and XS Max smoothed out solid updates to a winning formula, he says. U.S. Today's Ed Beige telling his readers these two new iPhones are the best Apple has ever made. As for if the cost justifies the expense, Beige writes, well, maybe you should wait until the iPhone XR appears next month. The Journal's Joanna Stern echoes that theme. Sit tight for the iPhone XR, she says, that the new iPhones are great, but that the XR due out in October, remember, sounds more like a great deal in her opinion. For his part, Brian Chen of the New York Times, though, writing, bigger is now definitely better, acknowledging the price tags of these new smartphones, but emphasizing that their cameras and screens make them worth the high prices. Financial analysts now taking their best guesses about the mix of iPhones in the quarters ahead and what that then means for average selling prices. In a note today, RBC saying if the relatively cheaper 10R is the big seller, ASPs could grow low single digits to 820. But if the iPhone XS Max is the best seller, then RBC says ASPs could approach 900. Scott, back to you.
All right, Josh, thanks so much. So are the new iPhones worth the hype? Let's bring in CNBC.com's tech product editor, Todd Hazelton, who has the new phones. With him, you saw the report. Right. You've got the phones.
This is cool.
What do you say?
I said they're the best phones you can buy right now. Best iPhones, obviously, no surprise there. But I also agree with pretty much all those headlines there. I think everybody should wait to see what the XR offers in October. It launches in October for $749. These, on the other hand, are $1,000 and $1,099. Once you start packing in all the storage, that goes up to $1,449. So they're not cheap, but they are amazing. They've got the strongest glass Apple's ever put in the phones, more water resistant than ever. I threw it in the pond back at headquarters, which is pretty fun. It can go up to 6 feet of water for 30 minutes. It's got new signals, so a gigabit LTE, which is faster data than even the iPhone X last year. And it also has something business users will probably care about, dual SIM. So if you're going abroad, you know, going to Europe, you can pack a SIM card, pop it in when you get there, and leave them both in. Come back to the United States and just use your American SIM, which is pretty cool.
Oh, interesting. Everybody here have the iPhone or no?
Yes.
Anybody order one of these new phones?
No.
I have the 10 already.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So if you've got the 10 already, I don't think you need to upgrade, which is one of my points I make. But if you've got something like an iPhone 8, which also came out last year, I think it's worth the upgrade because you're moving towards where Apple's going, right?
Send this
no more home buttons. Yeah. Face ID, which I think we'll eventually see in iPads.
Even for you, Brian.
Even for me, that's all right.
Why do you think, though, I believe you think it's the next upgrade cycle that you're going to miss. So what is coming down the pike, so to speak, that you think is going to make us all upgrade?
As in, like, next year?
Yeah.
I don't know what Apple's going to do for next year, but I think...
But you say the R, though, is good enough.
Right, and that's next month.
That's
right.
That's the one that's the one, what did you say, 720?
And RBC was talking about $749.
$749.
That's the mass market, I think, for this year. And I think it has a 6.1-inch screen, so it's right between these. It has aluminum, so it's a little more cheaper than the steel. I think that's the one that a lot of people are going to like. But
Todd, extending Steve's question, does this change the game for people that were on the fence right now versus the 8? I mean, is this noticeably different to the tech community?
Yes, versus the 8, absolutely. Everything's upgraded over the 8. The camera, the screen especially, the new OLED display that we saw on the iPhone 10 last year, people love it. Better speakers, literally everything. In fact, I was talking to Apple about it, and they were like, it's a huge upgrade. And I was like, but you just launched that last year. Don't you feel like maybe customers that bought it a year later might be a little upset? But I think that's where the iPhone XR comes in. It's a little more affordable if you want to get it.
A big question, obviously, on everyone's mind is should I upgrade? So we sent Tim out to conduct our own Fast Money iPhone test. Here's how it works. We'll show a set of identical photos, one taken with the 8, another with the new iPhone XS, and then we're going to guess which one was shot with the new iPhone. Let's put the first one up and look.
Wait for this. It's
gonna
be
great. You go. That's Timmy Seymour. There you go.
Oh, it's like my blue steel shot right there.
That's out in Times Square. So which one is shot with the new iPhone?
I would say it's me on the left, so camera left.
Is it fair for you even to answer that?
I don't know. I mean, that's the left guy.
He should be excluded from it.
What do you think,
that's
guy?
Right. The one with the more vivid blue in your eyes and in your coat pocket there.
The new one was on the right.
Really?
The new one was on the right.
Wait, let me guess.
Let me get that wrong.
On the right.
Go ahead.
Crazy. Don't we have a funny graphic or something? There should be a game or a graphic.
I can help you understand why.
Please. Yeah.
The shadows. See how it's really dark. His coat was really dark on the left-hand side. On the right, it was clear. And that's because they increased the pixel size on the new cameras. And so you get more light inside the camera. So it actually is a cleaner. Mm.
I mean, it seems to me like it's a millennial upgrade. So they should take pictures of avocado toast and see how that works. Might be the best test.
All right, let's throw up the next one. Right, we throw up the next one?
Well, now we know how to play the game.
There we go. Now he needs a cup of coffee.
Yanni.
All right, so which one is with the new iPhone?
The one, well, I think on, we the right.
Just the one
now,
on the
now
right.
The, now the duller one. The less vivid one.
Yeah. The one on the right.
The one on the right.
Well, it's in the teleprompter, so all of you cheated.
Oh, come on. No, we didn't cheat this time.
Yeah. You know, I can't see the teleprompter.
Yeah, it was the one on the right again.
That's obvious, guys.
Yeah. I switched it up this time, right? All right, and finally, the rain didn't get to Tim today. There he is taking it. There he is. That's video now, obviously. Which one is with the new phone?
Oh. Did you tell your wife and kids to leave the house tonight, just in case?
Oh, which one? Move, yeah. You were scared I was going to fall.
Which one?
I'm going left. I think left.
All right, it is left.
See? There you go.
It is left. The XS on the left.
I tell you, Gene Kelly's
enough of a difference to make you want to buy the phone? That's the question.
I want to buy Tim another pair of pants. What is he wearing there?
All right.
Get that hat from
yesterday. Find me a better umbrella. That's for sure. I mean, it was outside of the fact that our good friends at the NASDAQ loaned that to me. So thank you, NASDAQ.
Todd, thank you, by the way.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Todd Hazelton bringing us the phones. You guys want to trade it? Let's trade it. Well, did anybody not own Apple on the desk?
I don't own Apple.
The phone or the stock?
The stock.
Doesn't interest me. To me, Apple is more
Is that
more
code word
like,
for I missed it?
No, well, yeah,
it sounds
maybe
like it.
If you want to say that.
Snap.
But to me, it's more like a utility.
Well, I mean.
No, it's more like a utility where you're going to get these steady returns. BK likes
it's
a little more
29%. Does that sound like utility? I understand, Bitcoin guy. I get it. It's
exactly.
Not 1,000%.
29%, that's
but
like
it's
a day's
29%.
Trading.
It's about ASPs, average selling price. I think that ultimately average selling price is going higher no matter what happens in Apple, and services is going higher as well.
All right, check out the Cramer Cam. The madman himself is sitting down with the CEO of Tilray as we speak to talk about the pot stocks parabolic rise. We'll tell you what he said, and we'll do that right after the break. Plus, Wall Street is back. Bankers getting paid the most since the financial crisis. Shareholders? Not so much. We'll explain what's behind the strange divergence. There's much more Fast Money next. We are back on Fast. Check out shares of Tilray. Parabolic move today. The company announcing it will be the first company to export medical cannabis to the U.S. for clinical trials. And Mad Money's Jim Cramer just spoke to the CEO moments ago about all of the M&A rumors circulating about the company. Take a listen.
I think all the alcohol companies need to enter this right. industry. It's a great hedge for them, or whether you're an alcohol company or an investor in an alcohol company. This is a global opportunity. Our intent is to build a company that dominates part of this $150 billion industry. I think you'll see multiple $100 billion companies. We don't want to partner with ABI. We want to build ABI.
Been a meteoric rise for Tilray, as you know, up more than 800%. Since the IPO back in July, it now has a market cap of $14.4 billion, bigger than 140 companies in the S&P 500. But despite all that hype, the company only has $28 million in sales. Now, by the way, the company has 21 million publicly traded shares. It traded 19 million today alone. What do you do with this?
Well, it's really tough. And on this show, you've seen me when the stock was overpriced at 30 say, hey, it's a little pricey here, but it's the only U.S. play. It's the first U.S. IPO. You know, there's maybe cheaper names. And you've seen me say at 100 bucks, hey, really expensive here. I'm not sure what to do, but I would not be buying the stock. We're now at close to $150. What happened today? Well, bottom line is that the FDA has come in and said that one of the main U.S. players, they're obviously very well situated in Canada, but they are someone that has U.S. positioning, it's significant U.S. positioning, can import medical cannabis. They're going to be researching it at UCSD. They're going to be able to make more progress on the research side. This is a day after we get Coca-Cola coming in here and talking about non-medical uses for CBD in their products at some point. So think about what's going on here. And he talked about $150 billion. I mean, that's impressive annually.
Yeah, we have the madman himself with us. Jim Cramer is joining us. Hey, Jimmy, it sounds like a great interview, but what do you do with a stock that's gone up as much as this one has when you compare it to some of the company's fundamentals?
Well, look, I will say, and it's great to talk to Tim. I saw him at the Green Market Report conference last week, too. There is, a half-a-trillion-dollar opportunity here, and there's really only about $40 billion worth of market cap of the major the marijuana or cannabis stocks. However, I did everything but just get on my knees and beg Brendan to be able to issue stock here because he's got to compete against the $5 billion war chest that cannabis has because of their exposure to Constellation. I know he says he wants to be the next Bud, but the thing that's smart is you're going to need a tremendous amount of capital to do medicine, to do beverages, to do edibles, to do pet health, all of these things they want to do. That requires a lot of money. So, Scotty, I got to tell you, they should raise it when the corn is high and he just wasn't biting.
And you don't think there's too much hype, speculative money just plowing into these names and that someone's going to get hurt on the other side?
No, someone definitely will. But against that is the fact that Canopy was a company that when I first started talking about when Rob Sands came on, he made that big investment Constellation. And he said, Jim, you're ignoring how big this market is. Now, there's a lot of retail money in this stock, and it's a very difficult to borrow stock. And I think, as Tim and I know, that it was a really big news today that maybe the government is getting a little bit softer on medical. But I've got to tell you, if you're buying it up here, you better have more of a thesis than just that the quarter's going to be good. Because I think October 17th is not going to be nearly as much of a watershed. That's repeal day of prohibition in Canada. And, Scott, I think that these stocks are going to come down hard after October 17th.
Yeah, interesting. Jim, Guy has a question for you.
I got a question for you, JC. Carson Wentz, back in the fold. What is that? What are you thinking about that? What happens to Nick Foles now, man?
Well, Ron Jaworski was just tweeting something about how Foles, they've got to, we're 28th in short pass, 28th in passing right now, which is, I think, will change when Carson comes in, but we got to give him some weapons. And we haven't been giving, we do not have a receiving core that's anything like what we had last year in the Super Bowl. So I'm nervous. Call me nervous. I'll be there. Frank Reich's going to be coming. He's an unbelievable coach. He was our great offensive coordinator from the Colts. And I'm nervous. What can I say? I'm nervous. I love our birds, but I'm nervous. And I'd be nervous if I started buying Tilray tomorrow morning.
Timmy has a question for you, Jimmy.
Real quick, Jimmy, you've interviewed a lot of these CEOs. What's the common thread with these guys? They're young, they're entrepreneurial. What else?
I think that they genuinely believe in the power of cannabis to stop opiates. They believe in the power of cannabis to be able to make it so that we are safer from violence at home, because alcohol is such a big part of that. I think they believe in cannabis as a way to be able to have less drunk driving. But most importantly, I think they believe in cannabis because it's a heck of a lot healthier than everything else we put in our bodies.
Yeah, Jimmy, good stuff. We can't wait for the interview.
Well,
thanks for being
with
us.
I'm so glad you had me on. I think the interview is pretty groundbreaking.
Yeah, we're glad as well. There's Brendan Kennedy. Jim, sitting down with him exclusively. You can catch the interview in about 15 to 20 minutes or so. Stay tuned for Mad Money Top of the Hour. Coming up here next is the FANG trade two-faced. There's a divergence happening in the popular tech trade that might surprise you. Got those details ahead. Plus, check out this chart. Financials, they're flat this year, so would you believe Wall Street pay just hit its highest levels since the crisis? What is going on at the big banks? We'll discuss much more. Fast Money is after this break. Welcome back to Fast Money. It's the two faces of FANG, Facebook and Google falling over the past month, while Amazon and Netflix, well, they're up. So in this great FANG divergence, do you bet on the winners or do you bet on the losers?
I think you have to bet on the winners at this point. You have a day of reckoning for a lot of these social media stocks coming at the end of September, where you have Jeff Sessions is getting educated on it. He's getting briefed on it. And we're going to see what type of bite DC is going to try to enact against a lot of these social names. I think it will probably be a buy the news event or buy the fact event, because I don't think much is really going to change. But I would say that they're still going to be outperformed by the winners in the space.
I tell you, you know, first of all, people think I'm short Facebook because I've been very negative on some of the approach they've taken to how they've talked about their security and the costs and the risk to their business. I own Facebook and a handful of accounts, but bottom line for me is that is not a name to go with. And Google, I think, also has regulatory risks ahead of it. So I can't touch Netflix because I don't believe in that business model. I believe in the business model. I don't believe in the valuation. And Amazon, yes, I think you have to ride that, because even though they have regulatory
concerns. You have no problem with the Amazon valuation, but you have a problem with the Netflix value.
Because I think Amazon has a moat. I think Netflix has so much competition around them that I think it's just a matter of time.
I thought Facebook wasn't going to rally off the Zuckerberg testimony back in March, April, and it went from 155 to 205, but it's basically given it all back, and I think it's exactly where it should be. So I think Facebook gets interesting again at this 155 level, where it basically spent a lot of March and April. So I do think you can buy Facebook down another $5.
You guys really think more regulation is coming, like, big time Facebook's way?
Well, you know what?
It's
not going to get easier for them, right? So if you're looking at these four stocks, you say, who has the most risk over the next quarter or so? To me, it's Facebook and Google. Facebook more than Google. And I'd rather, if I'm going to split these, I'd rather go Netflix and Amazon in this one. I think they have the less risk. You go with the momentum, winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Do you think tech sort of regains its momentum as a group? In which case, you know, maybe not Facebook. Facebook's a special situation right now, but that, you know, most of these names really start getting.
Where else are you going to get this explosive growth? So BK earlier said about Apple, AXA Utility, it's still up 30%, and that's one of the low flyers. All these other names are up 50, 60, 70, 80%. You don't get that anywhere else in this market. You have to go back to tech.
Yeah. We think that's what's going to happen?
Well, that's why I stick with the winners. That's why I stick with the momentum, because these stocks have been used as an ATM sometimes. We've seen that multiple times, and they bounce back. So I want to go with the ones that didn't really sell off as much this time and have less headwinds over the next quarter.
All right, coming up, more money, more problems. Salaries of Wall Street's big bankers are soaring. Their stocks, though, are sinking, and some traders are betting on an even bigger breakdown ahead. We'll discuss that next. We are live in Times Square, right there at the NASDAQ market site. There's more Fast Money ahead. Do not go anywhere. Welcome back to Fast Money. Wall Street's paying well nowadays, but not if you're an investor in the biggest bank names. Bob Pisani breaking it down at the New York Stock Exchange for us tonight. Bob?
Good evening, Scotty. Salaries on Wall Street rose last year to their highest level since the 2008 financial crisis. That's according to a report issued Monday by New York State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli. The report puts the average salary in New York City's security industry in 2017, $422,500. That's a 13% increase over the year before. And by the way, it's the third highest average on record after adjusting for inflation. Now, that's pretty close to the overall rise in profits. Profits for the first half of 2018 stand at $13.7 billion, 11% higher than the same period last year. Now, the reason profits are up is that revenues grew faster than expenses, up 8.6% in the first half of 2018. Revenue growth was especially strong in wealth management, up 14%. Revenue from trading was up 22%. That's a surprise. Now, this is the good news. The bad news is Wall Street's a lot smaller now. You know, the workforce is 6% lower than it was at its 2007 peak. So here's a little more bad news. Even though the profits are up, investing in the big investment banks have not been winners this year. The S&P 500 is up nearly 9% this year. Banks, you see, up a measly 1%. Big names like Fifth Third and Citigroup, they're down. And the investment banks are even worse. Look at some of these numbers. Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs, both down nearly 10%. Goldman, by the way, saw a 17% decline in trading revenues last quarter. That was due to low volatility and the limits on the ability of Wall Street traders to profit from market bets. It was the worst on the street. That stock is now, by the way, the worst performing Dow component this year. But banks have got bigger problems overall. Put together flat yield curve, put together loan growth that's mostly flattish, and higher deposit costs. And you have investors saying, there's better places to put my money right now. Back to you, Scott.
Yeah, Bob, thank you very much. We'll trade it now.
Well, I mean, it's
interesting that these stocks just can't, they can't catch a bid.
No, they can't.
They
seem to be foretelling another story, and I'm not going to tell you what that story is because I don't know. I think the balance sheets are excellent. I think the earnings profile has actually returned, maybe not to pre-financial crisis, but I think the valuations are very compelling. And I think higher salaries, by the way, don't mean that suddenly these guys are having gangbusters business. Their businesses have never been more efficient. There's one half the people working at these banks, so paying people who are performing makes sense to me.
The regionals had outperformed the big money center banks recently, but when you look at SunTrust and BB&T, they both guided lower on net interest margins. So that's what's taking the steam out of them. KRE, the regional banking index, is up 5% against an XLF, which is up 1% year to date. You could see that spread actually catch down to those bigger money center banks. These act like utilities. I would stay away from financials.
It's become too easy to avoid these names, Guy, right?
Goldman Sachs is absolutely, there's something going on there. Clearly, there's an upheaval. There's a complete change in philosophy. All the J. Aaron trading, fixed income, currency, commodities, people seem to be out of favor. It's moving towards more of a banking fee-based business. There are going to be some growing pains there, and I think the stock is definitely saying that. Citibank, to me, at one time's book value is the most interesting.
Yeah, I mean, growing pains are exactly right, but this is an industry that's going through full disruption. I mean, just look at what J.P. Morgan's had to do by cutting commission rates because of the Robinhood app and other things like that. Not only blockchain technology coming along, and demographics is driving that disruption. So you look at the millennials, they don't want these big banks. They don't want to do that. They want to go with Amazon and bank with them.
But their profitability, Brian, is extraordinary. Look at J.P. Morgan.
I agree, but they can't get out of their way. I've tried it a bunch of times this year. They don't go up. They don't go up.
Okay. All right.
Well, I mean, you would think, okay, you got a bull market. The S&P is not all that far from a new all-time high. You got strong economy.
You've got 3% GDP.
Yeah.
And these guys should be levered to that. So, but
J.P.
Morgan had record profits on high ROE. So that, to me, is enough to hang in there.
Yeah. All right. Options traders are betting on an even bigger breakdown for one of these struggling bank stocks. Let's go out to San Francisco. Mike Coe's there with the details. Mike.
Yeah, so we were taking a look at Morgan Stanley today, which traded about double the average morning put volume, and that was largely the result of a purchase of 1,500 October 5th weekly 47-46 put spreads. The buyer paid 29 cents for those. So the buyer is making a bearish bet that Morgan Stanley is going to get down to that 46 lower strike sometime within the next 2.5 weeks or so. And that is, of course, it going to expire before they report earnings a couple weeks later in October. But the thing I would take a look at here is that I think this is really more of a technical play because the lower strike is essentially targeting the lows that we saw this year earlier in July.
Yeah. Who's got something for Mikey on Morgan Stanley, this options play? Maybe that's the best way to do a trade in this space.
Well, or Mike, how about versus a Goldman Sachs? Because, again, people have put these two companies in the same basket. So is there a way you might position that trade?
Yeah, I think you could do the same thing in Goldman Sachs. Morgan, of course, is a little bit more about their asset management business, mm-hmm. but options are cheap in all of these names, as are the stocks themselves, actually.
Mike, good stuff. Thank you. Mike Coe out in San Francisco. For more options action, of course, check out the full show Fridays, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Up next, you know what? Final trades. Let's go around the horn. Tim Seymour, you're
an industrial
up first.
Name that has not participated, but it started to bounce, GM.
BK.
I still think oil's the big trade here. XOP, you continue with that one.
All right, thank you very much. Steve Grasso.
Kronos, yes, the cannabis space is overextended. Yes, I think that these all things have run way too far. Kronos.
Guy Adami.
Yeoman's work in Mel's absence, Scott. You know, thanks for being with us.
It has been a privilege. And a
there
pleasure.
Was
it has.
What do you mean?
I can't even be sincere.
I think Twitter's going to bounce.
My gosh.
I took it as
all right. Thank you very much. Mad Money with Jim Cramer begins now.